Welcome to Season 7, Episode 23 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we decide to give our thoughts on the problem of PDF piracy. We also decide to switch it up a bit, and instead of the GM's pet peeves, we go to the opposite side of the table and give you the player's point of views about what they hate about GMs. Again, welcome to Season 7, Episode 23 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining me is Tristan and Jimto. Welcome, gentlemen, to the final episode of 2015. It's weird to say 2015, by the way.
It is, you know, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
It's hard to believe that this year just flew by without actually... right now it's actually December 1st, and some people are going like, this is the final episode of the year? Yes, we're taking a break, folks. It will be several weeks. But we did actually hit 23 episodes this year, which is about average for us. I think since we've, you know, the only year that I don't think we didn't do at least 23 episodes was... Season 1, you know, because that was, like, begun in the middle of the year. I think we got, like, 13, 14, something like that out. So, you know, 23, yeah, that, you know, on a good year, we could get 26 out because, you know, 52 weeks in a year, and we release an episode roughly every 2 weeks. But with life and other things, sometimes that just doesn't work out for us. So, you know, I say 23, 24. I think 1 year we did do 25. I don't remember when, but I think we did about 25 1 year, and I was like, wow, that is just amazing. So, this year, only 23 episodes, but that's okay, because we'll see. It'll be a good one, right? Any interesting comments before we kind of hit the news? There really isn't any news. It's all Kickstarter crap, for those of you listening and going like, damn it, there is no real news. But, you know, it's the end of the year. There's not much. I think the only thing that I was reading in the news was more along the lines of false controversy, I guess is what I'd like to call it. Mm-hmm. You know? And so that didn't seem like really news to me, and it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
Anything? Or should we just...
No.
All right, we'll just
go right into it.
All right, we'll just go right into it. I'm going to kind of break these up into what I'm going to call some actual RPG-related stuff, miniatures... And then dice. I think that's a good breakdown. First up, we have a Kickstarter for RuneQuest Classic Edition, which is the second edition rulebook. They want to actually print it again with a whole bunch of other things, I think, if all their, stretch goals. God, I couldn't even think of the term for a minute. I'm looking at it right on the screen. It's like, I can't think of stretch goals. So they have a whole bunch of, you know, stretch goals that they're trying to do. And they've actually gotten, right now they're at $88,000. I was going to say $30,000. They were looking for $30,000. They got almost $89,000. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I kind of liked RuneQuest. I never really got into the Glorantha setting, though, that the classic was set in. So,
me either. I would like to play it.
But, you know, I actually started really playing RuneQuest with the Avalon Hill edition, which some people go like, sacrilege. You know, I mean, it uses the Chaosium basic system. So, I mean, it's the same one that, you know, Call of Cthulhu and some of the others that they released used. It's not bad. I like it. So,
actually, speaking of Chaosium, the guy that's doing this, Rick Mintz, he's actually the head of Moon Design. He is the president of Chaosium right now.
Okay, there you go.
Handed it over to.
There you go. Pretty cool. And you know, I mean, for $15, you can get the PDF of the classic edition. You know, and of course, this is going to be interesting because we're going to talk about PDFs a little bit later. So, and then if you want $30 for the hardcover.
Not bad for
hardcover. That's not bad.
No.
And so, it gets weird when you get to, you know, like someone actually, 25 backers actually pledge $1,000.
Holy cow, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, because it's all gone. There were 25 slots, and there's 25... I mean, that was the High Priest Edition. You receive the Leatherette. I love that. Leatherette. Rune Quest Classic Edition book with colored dust jacket, printed player handouts, a printed GM screen, a printed old school Rune Quest source pack, PDFs of those four items, the hardcover playtest manuscript book, plus hardcover volume 2 unpublished scenarios and source material set. So some people just were like, hey, I want all that and more. You know, I'm interested in things, but sometimes it's like, $1,000?
Yeah, that's a lot of money to spend on an RPG.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you have to be a real RuneQuest fan. But it's kind of cool that, you know, there are those people out there. So.
Oh, yeah.
Next up, we have... this one I do not think is going to reach its goal, because it kind of... there are already games that do this. You know, I mean, they're... I hate saying that, because people are like, well, you know, because it's like saying, okay, well, there's you know... There's other game, science fiction games by Traveler, and it's like saying, oh, there's why have another science fiction game? You have Traveler, or like, why make another fantasy game? There's, you know, there's D&D, but this is Spy, a game of action and espionage. And, you know, I think the reason I say I don't know if we really need this is I think the market for spy games is really small. Does that make sense?
I agree, totally.
An RPG.
Yeah, I would agree as well.
And I don't mean that to be crass, but you know, I mean, there is Spycraft, which I think is overly complicated these days. And nothing against those guys, but that's a very thick rule book that is another rule book you can use to possibly deflect bullets.
Possibly, yeah.
You know, just got to stick the steel insert. There you go. See, it's a book called Spycraft. It has a steel insert. I can deflect the bullets coming at me from the passing car. Anyway, so I don't know. It's kind of, you know, it's just kind of interesting. They only went $10 to get a PDF copy of the game rules, which, you know, again, that's in line. And then $18 will be the 8.5 by 11 game rule book printed, which is weird. You know, So it's like they have, see, the other one did it right. It's like if you get the printed copy, they're giving you the PDF. Where in this one, there's a hardcover, there's a PDF level, there's a hardcover only level, and then there's a PDF and our rulebook level, printed rulebook.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't like that because I think that's just a little too fidgety, if that makes any sense. So the goal is modest. They're only looking for $2,500. But right now, they still got 26 days to go. They've only raised 586. I think for something this low and this niche, I guess, this is the wrong time of year to do this Kickstarter, I think. Just
yeah, mind. No. Yeah, I'd have to agree on that. Wanting anything during December is always a kind of a risky gambit. But
yeah, exactly. Okay, so next up is one. I don't like the title of. It's reached its goal. But I don't like the title. It says Mindjammer, the role-playing game. But the role RPG already exists. Really what this is, it's for the supplement for it. Mm-hmm. When you actually read it, it's for the City People full-color softback and expanded Mindjammer RPG supplements and source and whatever. And it's like, okay, well, why didn't you say that in the title rather than just saying making it look sound like it's for the actual RPG?
I don't know, but I wish they would have. It makes me... Now, I don't know if they're trying to do anything sneaky, per se, but, yeah, what they're labeling it is not what it is for, like you said.
Right.
So. Yeah. I mean, they've already reached their goal. I mean, they only wanted, like... well, obviously, it's in the UK because of the pounds, but...
Pounds, yeah.
And so, you know, the conversion goal was only, like, $7,600, and they got about $22,000. So, you know, they're going to, I mean, obviously it's going to be presented, but yeah, I did have a little bit of a problem because originally I was like, oh, this is for the RPG. And then I started reading and I'm like, no, it's actually just for it's actually for an adventure called The City People.
Yeah.
And then supporting material as they get more money in their stretch goals. So it's like, they could have just said Mindjammer you know, supplements for Mindjammer or something, and I think it would have been a little more informative and honest. And I'm not saying right. they did anything wrong. I just think that that's kind of a the way they listed it. It's like if you were just to look at the title, like, oh, this has to be for the RPG. That's cool. And you start reading, it's like it's for supplements. That sucks. I was hoping because I don't know. Do they have a level we get the RPG to?
Well, you can kick in an additional 30 pounds, or approximately $45 US, to buy an extra copy of the Mindjammer RPG.
Ah, okay. So it's possible, but still, it's kind of a little weird. That's the only thing. I mean, has either one of you guys even played this or seen the physical copy or perused the rule book on this?
No, I have
never once.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I was expecting. It's like, oh, Mindjammer, the RPG. Well, let's see what that's about. And it's like, it says it's a transhuman science fiction RPG. I'd be very interested if any of the listeners have actually played this. Because, I mean, obviously there's people out there that have because, you know, it reached its three times its stretch goal. I mean, it's three times its...
Oh, I see. They're using the Fate system for it.
Oh, is that what it is? Well, that explains why I haven't played it. Nothing against Fate. It's just I tried it at a convention and realized it's just not the game for me.
Yeah.
Not for my play style. But I can see where other people, it's the perfect game for them. And that's why we have different games. Because all of us, not every single person wants the same thing out of an RPG.
Indeed. So. Indeed.
All right. So next we have up. I have a supplement. Next up. I was thinking I was already into the miniatures. We have the Fairy Ring for Pathfinder RPG game and 5th edition. They're looking for $20,000. That's a lot of money. You know.
Agreed.
You know, so I'm like, and they have 29 days to go. Again, this is one of those ones that to me seems it's the wrong time to be kickstarting this sucker.
Yeah.
So
I mean, essentially for what is basically let's add in
a bunch of
fey creatures into your game and basically turn your Pathfinder or 5e game into Changeling.
You know, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Again, it just depends what you're trying to do. So, but yeah, $20,000, they've only gotten about a tenth of that right now. And so, again, this is another one that is complicated. It's like, okay, $15 for the player's guide. And then, $30 for the player's guide and the campaign guide. I get why they do that, but on the other hand, it's kind of frustrating because it's like, this should just be one freaking guide. I get tired of, I don't like when there's two different supplements for the same game. One, this is the Game Master's portion and this is the player's portion. Because at a certain level, it's like, what goes in the player's portion, what goes in the Game Master's portion? Sometimes it's like, you know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, obviously like the way, you know, we take D&D. You know, the original AD&D, the Player's Handbook, DMG, there was a certain division of material. But then when you get to, you know, 3.5, and I'm sure 4th edition was no different, you know, the material that was in the DM, some of the material that used to be in the DMG now went in the Player's Book and vice versa. You know, it's like, because you don't know where to put it.
Right.
So I'm sure, you know, it's going to be like, well, the GM stuff is all the secret stuff. And it's like, okay, I get that, but still. It seems excessive. Of course, I don't know what the page counts are. Maybe they're high. So, I don't know. But yeah, if you're interested in Fae, though, this might be something to look at. Although, like I said, with 29 days to go and looking for a 20,000 goal, that might be a little hard-pressed. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Miniatures. Miniatures, miniatures, miniatures. We have three sets of miniatures up. First one is for those of you who are running an Oriental-style adventure campaign and need undead, Kinsei Undead, which I kind of like. You know, you have some samurai. I actually do like the little undead samurai that they have. That's kind of cool. So I like this bent. Even if you don't do some sort of Oriental adventures, but you want some sort of unique undead for your next game in terms of miniatures. This might be the one. They were they reached their goal. They were asking almost $16,000 because it's obviously converted again from the UK. I find that, you know, a lot of the UK tends to have a tends to be a little more miniature oriented, at least in terms of kick, you know, stuff.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that. When I was a much younger man, I spent a semester studying in London, and while I was there, I only found one place where you could buy like gaming books, like your Dungeons and Dragons and stuff, and that was in a comic book shop right there in London. But if you wanted Warhammer, oh my God, there were the Fantasy Flight, not Fantasy Flight, but what was the company? Yeah, basically they had the Warhammer shops like all over.
Isn't that Citadel?
I think it is now, but I don't think it was that at the time. It was some other company that owned them at that point. But they were all over the place. You could, walk, two blocks and run into, three or four of them. So,
so
it was ridiculous.
Yeah, but again, these are kind of cool, although expensive. Because the starter set's like all 30 miniatures, and that's about $80 US. And then, of course, they're not going to be shipped until September of next year.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's a long time to wait. But, people have waited longer for their Reaper Bones, so...
That's true.
Very true.
So, next up is another set of minis. And these, I kind of like as a concept, is the Metamorphos Alpha 28mm miniatures for the old Metamorphos Alpha game, which... I know that they plan on doing a new edition of it at some point, if memory serves me. Somewhere along the line, James Ward. I think there was a Kickstarter at some point for it.
I think you're right. I do remember there being a Kickstarter for Metamorphos Alpha at some point.
Yeah. I can't keep up. There's just too many Kickstarters. But,
that's for sure.
I do like the example minis that they do have. I mean, the concept art looks pretty cool. And if you just play like Gamworld or some sort of other post-apocalyptic game, some of these might be useful.
Mm-hmm.
And they were only asking $8,500, which is not bad. And they're almost a little over $6,500. So they only have like a couple thousand left, which is not bad. And then $25 for like three minis, it looks like. For their primary species. Yeah, you have to... Again, this is another one of those ones where I don't like... The only thing I don't like about it is it's like, just trying to figure out which level you want to pledge and what do you get for that. So, because they have different tiers for the different minis.
Yeah.
But again, it's kind of cool. I mean, I do like the fact that they have some pretty... They have a couple interesting... minis in the mix, especially the little harvester robots, which look like some sort of weird death bots with size for hands.
Yeah, those are pretty cool.
But yeah,
I do like the fact that they've actually got the chart that shows where all the funds are going.
Yeah, they
in the shipping and handling section.
Oh yeah, yes,
do,
they
kind of like that.
Yeah,
it their total cost is actually more than they're asking for right now. But
yeah. Well, one of
the license is costing the most out of everything, even more than the physical sculpting and molding.
Yeah, that's like from their chart, that's like 40% of their cost or something like that. Something like that.
Yeah.
It's like $4,000.
Yeah.
Right, for the license everything. And then the actual sculpting and molding is like $70 less.
Which is amazing, so. That's interesting. This is the first time I've ever seen what the cost of a Kickstarter is. They have a fee of $255 is what they listed as a Kickstarter fee.
Mm-hmm.
I never realized it. I mean, I'm not surprised there's a fee to run a Kickstarter. I guess if it's successful. I've never really looked into it because I don't have the wherewithal to actually run a Kickstarter.
Here's the thing. I mean, that may take care of the Kickstarter fees, but there are taxes on the back end too.
Yeah.
And I don't think most people... take that into account, and for $8,000, it's probably not a big deal. But some of these Kickstarters that get up to hundreds of thousands, if not millions, that's a substantial chunk of change you owe Uncle Sam.
Yeah, well, again, we've talked about this before. Kickstarters are a very strange animal in the fact that it's hard to, if a Kickstarter is wildly successful, the person running it basically can go bankrupt.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, people don't realize that. They're like, well, they made all this money. Not really, because they ended up spending more money. Because I know people that are like, yeah, I had to, you know, either live in my home with all these books or physical materials sitting in my house until I got rid of them. The shipping ended up being more than I expected, or I had to rent a storage place to store all this crap, or any number of additional things. It actually is quite amazing. Or, you know, they had figured the cost at a certain volume, but once they reach another level, it wasn't sustainable at that really high level. So, all right. Finally, in terms of the last one, cultists. I love this. Hardwood Hobbies presents 28mm cultists. Who doesn't need cultists for their game? So, I just thought that was really kind of cool for your Call of Cthulhu kind of people. And I don't know if they're going to reach their goal. They were looking for, about $2,400. Right now, they're at about a little under $600. So,
yeah.
And this is, I guess this is Canada? Is that where this is from? Doesn't really... Yeah, because it's... Because the conversion's really horrid. They list it in dollars, and they list you about 75 cents USD. It's like, oh, yeah, this is a... And because they talk about shipping to U.S. and Canada, so I think this is Canadian. But...
Surprised. If Charlie Crank was still ahead of Chaosium, he would have threatened them to sue them by now, because... They're using the name Yog-Sothoth, and they're claiming... He used to claim everything RPG-related dealing with Cthulhu was their property.
Oh, yeah, well, that's...
He's not in charge anymore.
You know, at a certain point, like everything else, you just reach a point where you're just like, eh, does it really matter? All right, so last up, we have We have a Kickstarter set of dice, Magic Missile Dice. Apparently, he sold out at Gen Con, and people kept asking him, when will there be more? So he decided to run a Kickstarter to produce more of them. And so he's already reached his pledge goal of, he was only asking for $2,000, he has $2,600. So if you need some Magic Missile Dice, because you can't add a 1 to each one of your D4s.
That's just it, right? Who can't add a plus 1?
These are for you, and they're... I guess he's having them. I guess Q Workshop is. Is that right? Q Workshop? Yeah, Q Workshop is manufacturing the dice. So, and then. It's a. Again, I don't dismiss these. You know, people go like, I like these. I want these. Okay. You know, I get kitschy. You know, I have kitschy dice or whatever the hell you want to call it. Unique dice. I mean, I have my D total, which I hardly ever have ever used, but it's like something you own just because I have a D total. Do you? No. It's like owning a 100-sided die. Practical? Not really. These at least are practical. You know?
Yeah, these have a use.
They have a use, but I don't know.
They look cool, but they're D4s. I hate D4s. I can never pick the damn things up. I always got to slide them to the edge of the table and in my hand.
Well, there you go.
And heaven help you if they fall on the floor. They're little caltrops.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. You're kind of screwed there. So that's all the Kickstarters. Can you believe that? That's all the Kickstarters for now. So why don't we go ahead and go into the first topic, which was requested of us. I kind of wanted to originally get some manufacturers' viewpoints on this, but I think what I want to do is I want to give our viewpoints, and then next year try to... you know, follow up on this one with what some of the manufacturers have told us. And the question was PDF piracy. And let me see if I can find the actual question quote on this one. The question was, with the movement, I'm obviously abbreviating some of this, towards PDFs for a lot of RPG publishers, piracy of books has gone rampant. How do you guys feel about the trend, or do you support the sharing of PDFs? And it's an interesting question, because I do, you know, PDFs have taken over. Electronic format is, I mean, let's face it, there's a lot of Kickstarters that, oh, hey, that's what people are buying. They're not buying the physical book, they're buying just the PDF version of something, or the Kickstarter only produces a PDF version of a supplement. And we've all, I think, I don't know. I would assume that we've all used one bookshelf at some point. Mm-hmm. You know, drive-through RPG.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So, and, you know, I mean, let's face it, TSR, back in the day, well, technically WotC, they stopped producing, I say TSR. You know, sometimes I still confuse the two. You know, that's how old school I am. It's like, oh, it's D&D, it's still TSR. No, 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 it's WotC. You know, because honestly, I always tell people, it's like, I remember when WotC, what did they produce? Magic the Gathering and Talos Lanta. Mm-hmm. You know? It's like, oh, what happened to their Talos Lanta project? Oh, it's being produced elsewhere now. I mean, that title just kind of went away. But anyway, I won't say it's not that bad. It's just, it's kind of like other games where it's, I think it was just a little too hard to get into. I think I've taught, you know, there's a lot of games that, you know, there's just this buy-in that you have to have. Get into the game where it's like, if it's too expensive to get into it, who wants to screw with it? It's like, I don't want to know about all these cultures. Although they're all cool, I don't have to be an expert in a whole new world. That kind of thing. Where, you know, as we've talked about, even though there's no such, people say, there's no such thing as a standard fantasy campaign. There kind of is by default. Even though it's completely ridiculous and doesn't really hold up to, you know, the microscope. It's like, this society makes no sense, but this is what people say a standard fantasy game is. Anyway, you know, piracy of PDFs. First off, the assumption that they put out is that it is a problem. I don't know. I mean, I guess the question that we should ask ourselves, and let's be truthful, do any of us have PDFs that they didn't pay for?
Loads.
What was that?
Loads of them.
Yeah, I have a few. I have a few as well. So the question is that were they, did someone else buy them and did you get them, or were they really bad scans? You know, how was
I have some that are really bad scans. It kind of first started with, I was at a convention over in Davenport, Iowa, and there's a guy over there, that did some writing, used to work at TSR. I don't really want to give his name right now.
No worries.
He used to work at TSR, and then he also did some writing for The Unspeakable Oath, that old Call of Cthulhu fanzine.
Yeah.
And he had a table, and I saw he had all these Unspeakable Oaths for sale. And he sold them to me. He autographed the ones he'd written in. And then we were talking about Cthulhu for like a half hour. And, you know, just we both had a love for the game. And then I came back to the convention the next day, and he just handed me a CD, and it was full of Cthulhu PDFs. Mm. So, and I have other ones. I don't want to say I pirate exclusively. I do not. I tend to buy whenever I can, as long as I feel I'm not being gouged.
Mm.
There are PDFs out there that are
way too expensive for what they are.
Well, yeah, uh-huh. I mean, $12 for 20 pages of something that's barely been edited, you're overcharging, and I'm not paying that.
Or, yeah. I don't know, I know I've seen a lot where the PDF for the rule book or some or a supplement is like $1 or $2 cheaper than the print copy.
Yes.
And then you're just like, that doesn't jive. It's like, and they don't do something like, oh, you got the print copy, you can get the PDF. Because right. that's a trend, is that, you know, because, and I think that's a trend because there's a lot of people that realize, well, if you bought the print copy, you really want it, and we'll give you the PDF for free because otherwise you're just going to pirate it anyway, I think is kind of the response to that. Or you don't have to pirate it because I'm giving you the PDF.
Right. That's one of the things about Evil Hat, when, you know, they yes. put the Dresden books out, they were, you know, they had that published right on their website. You got the book, show us a receipt, we'll send you the PDF.
Right.
And in my case, I got one of those Dresden books as a Christmas gift, and I didn't have a receipt. And I emailed Fred, and I said, what do I do here? He goes, just send me a picture of you holding the book. So I did. He goes, that looks like a happy gamer, and had the PDF attached.
See, now that's good customer service.
That is exactly. Fantastic. And actually, the Evil Hat's model, where you can actually go onto their site and download both the Fate Accelerated and their Fate Core rules for pay what you want.
Yep.
Means like I did, I went and just downloaded the Fate Accelerated for free, looked it over, decided it was a game I wanted to try, and so I actually went out to my local comic book store and bought a copy of Fate Accelerated at the store. So,
and if I recall correctly, those pay what you want have done very well for them.
You know, yes.
Fred puts out their numbers. He doesn't keep it a secret. He says, this is how much we cost. This is how much shipping is. We had to print something here. This is what we charge. This is exactly how many we sold and how much money we made. This is our net profit on this product.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, that stuff is, to me is fascinating from that standpoint. So, I guess the question, first off, the question is piracy a problem? Would we?
It is for some people.
I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is for some companies. I mean, I think...
I mean, which companies do you think those are? I mean, maybe not maybe not by name, but by... Is there a practice that they're doing that helps cause this?
Well, I mean, I would definitely say that the bigger the company, probably the more problem you have with...
Piracy?
With piracy. Because the harder it is to... You know, and the more expensive you make your product, and then the you know, more you had to spend for a PDF, the more likely people are to, you know, find alternative means of finding the material.
Mm-hmm. And larger companies, for whatever reason, tend to put, I guess I kind of want to say barriers to whether that barrier is a high price or it's, you know, some kind of DRM or some junk like that.
Well,
the more
I mean,
that crap you put in there, the more it is for me to have that product the way I want, the more likely I will be to go find it somewhere else.
Well, I mean, in the case of, let's just take WotC. I know that, you know, for a long time, they didn't produce PDFs of any of their material. So people produced their own digital versions. And so that was illegal already. And they're like, oh, okay, I'm just going to give it to other people. So they, you know, they created their own piracy problem because they didn't have a PDF version available.
Well, didn't they like sell them for a couple months and then somebody put it on Scribd or something? And so they stopped selling PDFs, and that guy, didn't he get fined something stupid like $200,000?
I honestly don't know. It's
But now they're back selling them again. I think they kind of got that out of their system.
You know, but I mean, it's like one of the things that I have that was, I think that was still technically a TSR product. I have the old Dragon magazine CDs with the PDFs on them. Mm-hmm. And that's one of my, you know, that has like issues like 1 through 250 or something like that. I think that's right.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And it's funny because you look through them and you're like, so much of the stuff that we see is just repeated over and over and over again. And after you look through it, you're like, wow, we need to come up with new stuff.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of two minds. It's like, to me, I do have some PDFs that are obviously pirate versions. I sometimes it's just stuff that, you know, people just say, here's a CD. And you're like, okay, you know, it goes in your pile of stuff. And then, you know, I don't think I've purposely sought after material, but I have received it from people. They're like, you know, like for example, I'll play a game and it's just like, oh, you know, here's a PDF copy of the rule book so you can play the game, you know, in our session. And this is especially, I think, happens a lot on the virtual tabletop games, because it's the easiest way to say, oh, hey, you know, here's an electronic copy of the rule book so you can actually like make your character. I don't have to sit here and like handhold you through the entire process.
Right.
So, conversely, I think, you know, with one bookshelf, you know, Drive-Thru RPG and all these other companies, I have a lot of legitimate PDFs now that, you know, I wouldn't have bought otherwise. Like for example, because it's complete. Like, for example, I bought the Twilight 2000 bundle on Drive-Thru RPG, so I, like, have, like, every possible old Twilight 2000 supplement that they produced. And that's kind of cool. So, I mean, I am doing legitimate, I'm doing a lot more legitimate purposes, you know, purchasing of PDFs, you know, and a lot of the PDFs that I have that are illegal are stuff that they were originally, like I said, like WotC stuff, was stuff that they never created in the first place originally until, right, I guess now.
Yeah, that's kind of the way it was with me. You know, I ended up with I think at one point we were playing Mutants and Masterminds, and I had the core book, I had all the rules we needed to play, but then one friend of mine was like, oh, here, hands me a flash drive, and it's every a PDF of all every supplement ever created for Mutants and Masterminds. So
yeah, that again, that's what happens a lot. You have friends who are less law abiding than you, and they hand you stuff, and
and all of a sudden, or oh hey, you want to play this, Seventh Sea game? Oh sure, yeah, I'd love to play. Okay, well here's a PDF file of the rule book and everything you need to get started. So
yeah, exactly.
I would say probably a high percentile, like probably 98% of the PDFs I have were friends that just passed them over.
Yeah.
So I very rarely went to actually look for things that I did want. But I mean, back before like Chaosium like redid Masks of Nyarlathotep and Horror on the Orient Express, if you wanted to buy those, they were like $300
right.
on Amazon.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
I wasn't going to do that.
So I mean, I guess the question is, so piracy does exist, obviously. I mean, but is there something that companies can do to limit it? Because I don't think they can eliminate it. Because, I mean, just like we've described, it's like, your buddy has a PDF and he's like, oh, you need this to play. And he just gives it to you. Now, you can say, I can be Mr. Lawful Good Paladin and be like, no, let me pay for that. And that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. We're not all we're not all that good of people.
Right.
I'm sure there are people. Are there things that companies can do? I mean, honestly, from my mind, that's why I like, a lot of the companies where they went to that whole, hey, you have the physical copy, here's, you can get the PDF for free. Because what that does, it promotes, you want to buy the physical product, because I don't know about you, but I like having physical products if I can, especially for rule books. And then you get the PDF and like, hey, that's a good exchange. I hate when I have to buy a physical product and then have to buy the PDF as well.
Yeah, that's a killer.
And what's funny is that I remember several years ago arguing that that's what needs to happen. With the RPG industry, where it's like, hey, if you get a physical product, there has to be a mechanism that if you have the physical product, you get the PDF. And people were like, I was actually told that is not a feasible proposition. And I'm like, nowadays, companies are doing it and it's not making them go broke. So, mm-hmm. So besides that, is there any other things that a company can do? I mean, I guess reasonably priced PDFs is the other one that we've talked about.
That's it. And I have friends over at Total Party Kill Games on DriveThruRPG that seems like they're always having a sale on something. And even before that, their PDFs are outrageously priced at all. And, they're well written, they got great covers, they got good art, they got great layout, they're edited. I honestly think they could probably stand to sell them for a few bucks more than what they do. But they don't, because the low price encourages people to buy rather than to, grab it off some torrent somewhere.
Where you don't know if it contains something that you don't want on your computer.
Right, yeah, exactly, along with what you do.
So,
yeah, just make it easy, make it fiscally responsible, I guess. It doesn't take that much thought on, do I want to buy this thing that costs, $4.99? I'll just buy it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to piddle around. The time I'd waste looking for it would take longer than $5 worth of my time.
I think that's what it is. It's that cost benefit analysis that you go through. And if you make PDFs at a reasonable price point, it's kind of like what's happened in the music industry with music, which is really kind of bad for them. But that's another story. But iTunes made it like 99 cents for a song. Okay, well you don't have to pirate the damn song anymore. That's kind of what happened with MP3s and our audio files. It's like, yeah, there's still piracy in that. Yes, I'm not going to sit here and deny that. But, you make it to the average person is not going to pirate because it's just cheaper just to purchase it, is what happens.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I can say with all honesty, I haven't pirated a single song or album since I got my first iPod all them years ago.
I actually am a big fan of ripping all my own stuff. You know, from actual CDs. People go like,
yeah.
What? Yeah, I like having the CDs because, let's face it, when you buy them, it's just as MP3s, and you don't really own them. But that's another story. We can digress about that.
Yeah, I still have all my CDs. They're just buried in the basement.
You know, yeah, that's pretty much what happens. All right, why don't we go ahead and switch gears, because we only got a short time. The other one that we kind of thought would be cool to talk about besides piracy. Is there any last comments on the piracy one? Or do you think we covered everything?
I think we covered it, yeah.
Yeah, generally speaking, no, we don't condone piracy, but we've all kind of done it, either inadvertently or purposefully. and we think the best solutions are just really make it cheap enough that it's not really worth the pirate, I guess, is the answer. But can you stop it? No. And unfortunately, I think for like big companies, especially like WotC, we have a really, really popular product, there is no easy solution even with that. Because the number of people that will have the product, even the people that will buy it legitimately, and the ones that will disperse it even accidentally after that or on purpose, are pretty high. So
yeah.
WotC's just screwed no matter which way you look at it. So, okay, so last up for today is the last show we talked about Game Master pet peeves. But now we want to switch the tables and what do Game Masters do that are the pet peeves of all players, or of players in general?
Specifically from me.
Specifically for you, yes. Yeah, you... No. I wanted to... No, go ahead.
Just like last week, I got a list of a few things here.
All right, let's go.
First one is GMs that refuse to allow more than one way to solve a problem, regardless if the way that they have planned for something to go has no effect on the rest of the story. The example I have for this was, I was at a con once, I was playing a game of Toon. If you've never played Toon, you're literally cartoons.
Right, I've mm-hmm. old Steve Jackson game.
Yep. So I was playing
Demented bunny?
No, I was a bull that was a kind of a narcissist. He'd walk around on two legs, and in his other one hand, he'd hold a silver mirror, and he'd look at himself all the time. The other time, he was always like, you know, he had the big poof, and he's putting makeup on his face the whole time. during the course of the story, we needed to get into a bank vault, and the bank vault was located in the back corner. And one of my character's strengths was he was very strong, and so I figured, you know, like all the old cartoons where, you know, the character gets up speed and like they burst through the brick wall and like there's a outline of their shape stuck in the wall. Where
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I wanted to do to get in the vault. And I told him what I wanted to do, and the GM, man, he laughed and laughed. I rolled really well and he wouldn't allow it. Just didn't work. Just said it didn't work. Didn't get any description other than it didn't work. So I'm like, what the hell? I said, well, maybe it's got something special around it. I don't know. But eventually, we just went inside the bank, and we found a key, and we opened the door.
Oh,
that's it.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's useless. What else you got?
Yeah. Also, this same game, but I've seen it in other games too, is GMs who insist on mashing games and genres together in an attempt to be edgy or cool. The Toon game. It's a game of cartoons, but when we sat down, he said it was a game of Toon that also was Vampire the Masquerade, Werewolf, and Savage Worlds.
Oh,
you know what this reminds me? I mean, this kind of goes along with my someone I once played with where everything involved either extra-dimensional travel or time travel, no matter what the game, whether it was fantasy, science fiction, and you're just like, no. And then you get a headache because you're just like, oh, that's annoying.
Yeah, in this game there were some cartoon werewolves and some cartoon vampires. That's all they were. They weren't World of Darkness inspired at all. And the Savage Worlds thing was he added a Benny mechanic.
Oh. Okay. Oh, whatever.
Okay. It's like, all right. That irks me. Next one. GMs who punish their players for wandering off the train tracks that the GM has laid down for them. Specifically, it's like, say you're walking through a forest. You're supposed to go from one town to the next, point A to point B. You get halfway through the forest, you wander 20 feet off the road, and suddenly there's a bear with chainsaw hands to chase you back towards the train tracks. That crap drives me insane, because you're taking away, I think, you know, some of the fun from the players. You know, the, kind of the selling point for RPGs a lot is you can do whatever you want. But for GMs like that, it's like, you can do whatever I want as long as it is what I want you to do. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of kills the spirit of the game for me. So, not a big fan of that. I also heard over on the Happy Jacks RPG podcast at one point, there was a GM who actually doled out what he called wandering damage. If you wandered off the path, he would just start taking your hit points and calling it wandering damage.
Oh, that, see, that's useless.
That is useless.
Right?
That's evil on a level.
This next one's pretty simple. Kind of like last week where you're talking about where, you know, you have a couple that are playing. Mm-hmm. When one of the members of the couple is the GM and then they either favor their significant other or they unnecessarily ride them too damn hard and unfairly at the expense of the game.
Yeah, that I can see that. And that gets rough because, you know, you actually have two GMs, right? You're right. You have the one that you're right is favoring and the other one that's doing it the opposite way to try to prove that he's not favoring.
Not favoring, mm-hmm. Right.
And in both cases, you know, the significant other is just kind of either that, you know, people are pissed at her because she got the magic weapon or they just feel bad for her because nothing she do ever works.
Right. Okay. What else you got?
GMs who don't prep and they try to cover it by throwing enough random counters in to last an entire session.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played a game of that. I played many games of that.
I've played too many of them. It's not a lot, but it's still too many. It's just, you know, you show up, you sit down, you leave town, you know, because usually what we always try to do, like, is we usually try to tell the GM what we plan to do the next session so they can
plan
a little bit of guide to prep. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, but then they don't actually do that, so you step 10 feet out of town, random encounter. You finish that, you walk another mile, random encounter. And, you know, ad nauseum until your session's over, whether that's 3, 4, or 6 hours.
Yeah, that's annoying.
Not a big fan of that. Next one is... this one sticks in my craw. It didn't even happen to me. It happened to a friend of mine. and it makes me mad. Those are GMs that give options to the player and then get upset when the players attempt to use those options.
What?
Yeah, very specifically, my friend Derek, who I usually play Call of Cthulhu with, he was at a con with me, and he played a Shadowrun versus Cthulhu game. And the guy that was running it just handed out characters from the Shadowrun book. And one of those guys had a rocket launcher. Well, if you give a guy who's, you know, basically a soldier a rocket launcher...
They're going to use a rocket launcher.
Yeah, when it comes up in battle, they're going to use a rocket launcher. And... this guy didn't know the rules to how to do a rocket launcher, and he got very upset that Derek was like, he didn't know. He actually said, "I didn't know you were going to use the rocket launcher." And he sounded whining when he said it. I'm like, how could you not know that? Seriously.
Here's a button. Don't press the button.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Wait a minute. You press the button? Oh, crap. Now I got to go look up the rules. What happens when you press the button? I didn't think you were going to press the button.
For a small fee, I can give you this blue button to put the house down.
But it didn't help that that game session was essentially the guy's normal, you know, week, every other week campaign, which was kind of like a bastardized version of the town we were in that they all lived in. And my friend was the only player that wasn't a regular player in that campaign.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
All right.
Two more.
All right.
GMs who retcon major chunks of the story after a session to make their life easier in future games or for future prep. This happened to me once by my buddy Derek, actually. And I'd be upset for me telling him this, but I don't care. In a Cthulhu game, we ended up fighting this... big bad in an underground cabin, and we were getting our asses handed to us. And at a certain point in the fight, the big bad just basically tells us, hey, if you bring me an innocent soul, I'm just going to let you guys go. And we're like, yes, we will do this because we are tired of getting our asses handed to us. So we went and found this guy back in town, and we brought him in there and basically handed him over. And immediately, you know, we were all still very, very injured. And we immediately all took, oh boy, was it D10 or D20 sanity loss? I mean, it was a major amount for a Cthulhu game. And basically the next day, we went our separate ways. That was the end of the session. And the next day we got an email or a text or something basically saying, oh, it was all a dream. It didn't happen. Because the guy that we had brought in and sacrificed was very important to the next few sessions. I don't know exactly how he was important. I actually do not remember at this point. This was quite a number of years ago. But
at this point, it doesn't really matter.
No, yeah, just move that information to a different NPC in town. You know, maybe instead of that guy, it was, you know, the shopkeeper or the mechanic or something. Yeah. Who knows?
Who knows? All right, what you have one more, right?
Away that sanity loss punishment that we deserved for handing over an innocent soul. You should not get off lightly for that. We were not evil characters, so we should have been punished for it.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And there, like I was saying, you have one more, right?
I have one more. This kind of calls back to one I actually did last week, but it's more on the GM side, and that's GMs who let people do undesirable behaviors or actions just because they don't want to deal with it, and it kind of makes their life easier, even if it annoys the rest of the players. And I'm talking about the, you know, dice cheating, excessive arguing, allowing unrealistic equipment. I was in a campaign, that same Cthulhu campaign, with a guy who somehow had a pistol on each side of his belt. He also had a specially constructed trench coat that had two shotguns and a rifle in it, but didn't make any noise when he walked. Ever.
Yeah, right.
And at a certain point, it was just easier to, like, all right, whatever. And I didn't say anything because I wasn't running the game, but we kind of talked about it, and essentially the GM or the keeper in this particular case would just basically impose penalties on him that he didn't know about. And that is my list.
Well, I got one to add.
All right.
Game masters whose NPCs seem to be more important than their PCs, you know. Yes. You know, the whole...
Oh, yeah.
The NPCs that always come in, where can you save the day? What the hell are the PCs even in this adventure for? Mm-hmm. You know, I've been in that situation so many times where it's just like the PCs are, you know, as PCs, we're trying to get out of a bad situation, but the NPCs come in to save the day. It's like, what are we? We're the second bananas here?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. don't get me wrong. I mean, in some games you play, you know, the player characters don't have. High visibility, but you know they're supposed to be able to solve their own problems at a certain level. You know, they may not solve, you know, all the world's problems, but they're supposed to be able to solve their own. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I played a game. I think it was one of the few times I actually played. What the hell is that? Shadowrun. And the guy who ran that, his NPCs were just more important. The story he was trying to tell involved the NPCs more than it involved us. And you're just like, what? Why don't you just go do that? Play by yourself. Don't, you know, why is my player character here? So that's one of my pet peeves. You know, I guess, and to, you know, break that out even more, it's like the GMPC kind of bothers me, that kind of thing. Now, sometimes, yeah, I know. I was about to say sometimes it might be okay, but generally speaking, that's just, to me, that's a big no-no, where it's just like, it's like the GM has his own PC that he's running in his own game.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tristan.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a red flag right there. If I see a GM who's playing a PC, immediately I'm like, yeah, no, this is not going to work.
That's what I was going to say. It makes me immediately suspicious.
Yeah. And it's like, he's here to help. Really? Okay. You know, I try never to do that. It's like, you know, the player shouldn't be like, well, Bob's going to solve that problem. Bob's the NPC. Why should he be solving your problem for you?
Well, if he can handle the final battle, why doesn't he just do the whole encounter?
Right.
We'll just kind of follow behind and pick up treasure.
You know, why did we hire... why did he hire us to solve his problems? Right. When he can do all this stuff. Yeah, that stuff, that drives me nuts. So, and then, again, like you said, you know, I agree with the whole, where the game master, it's like, you know, he has no story. Well, what the hell is going on? Or, like I said, I played that one Savage World game where it doesn't seem like, you can do anything you want. Okay, but nope. I mean, even as, I mean, give me a little guidance. Give me some sort of, hooks to.
Give me some sort of plot or a hook to get me going. That's one of my biggest pet peeves is the whole, oh, it's this giant sandbox world and you can go wherever you want to go and do whatever you want to do. Okay, but how about a plot hook? Can I get a plot hook? Where do I go for the plot hook?
Give me something.
Right, give me something.
I'd like to buy a pat. I'd like to buy a valve, Pat.
Can I have a rumor? Can I have something?
Rumors. No, because all the rumors are false.
The other thing, just to tack on a little bit to the GM PC, or the NPCs who are more important than your player characters, is the whole. Okay, so you made this entire whole, you know, plot. Spent the entire evening getting ready to do this one thing, and then the DM says, "Nope, it's not going to happen that way." And this happens instead, and my GM PC comes in and saves the day. Oh boy, that's a horror story.
I've never actually had to sit through that, but my God, if that happened, I would want a table flip so hard.
Let's see. What's
that was easily the worst gaming session I've ever been a part of. And then I literally told the guy afterwards, you know what? This game isn't working. You should probably just go write this as a novel. And he did.
Well, that's actually a pet peeve for people. It's like, my gaming adventure make a great novel. No, it won't.
No, it won't.
I've actually had people. I actually, as a side note, I actually sat in a writer's seminar at Gen Con where that's what people wanted to talk about, that they had these great gaming sessions that they were going to turn into novels. And you could just look at all the writers that were on the panel. They're just looking like, you're fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Right.
You know.
Not to say it can't be used as
no.
For some kind of story, but
right, but
word
you know,
for word.
Yeah. I mean, you have right. People like, I have this log. I've been keeping this log, and I'm like, oh my God, okay. You know what? If you and the rest of your party enjoy reading whatever the hell you're written, yeah, more power to you. Whatever. What was I gonna do? I was gonna have one more little blurb, and I forgot what I was gonna say. I know one of my other pet peeves. As a game master. Game masters who purposely split the party and then tell the party to go outside. You know, I'm going to hide what's happening with the other party. I actually played a game where that happened. And it's just like, this is stupid. Or game masters who, I don't know. And I mean, it's tough. It's like, you know, as a game master, you have to juggle whether or not to use the rules as written or just make judgment calls. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And this was a case of, you know, let's just say someone calls up our place. This was the scenario. We were spies, and someone called up to the place looking for someone we were protecting. And I just, you know, I answered the phone and like, oh, they're not here. You know, and it's like when someone tells you they're not there, you, unless you've been watching the place, which realistically, especially. Since I actually looked at the adventure later, nobody was doing that. He was like, you're lying. Give them to me. They're not here. It's like, make a bluff check. And I'm like, shouldn't have to bluff that because you have no information that they're not. You know, I could tell you anything and you would believe it at a certain level. You know, if they actually had people watching the place, that'd be a different story. But it was like a couple of lone people in the scenario. And me and the GM got in a little argument about that one. And he didn't care for it. I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. Bluff check failed. But it was just like, it really irked me because I'm thinking, that's one of those ones where the rules say do a bluff check. And let's face it, most of the players didn't even have bluff as a skill, which is weird when you consider it. But it's like, that's the way the characters are built, you know. But it's like, in reality, as a game master, would I require a bluff check for that? Because that's, to me, that's a role playing opportunity rather than a die skill system. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does make sense.
Sometimes, as you know, it's like, okay, you know, like for example, if some, to me, sometimes even if I do use the rules, I will integrate what they tell me. Like, this is what I'm going to tell them to. You know, it's like, okay, you still need to do like a persuasion check or a bluff check, but I'm going to give you a bonus because that's a really good idea and that's probably believable for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no.
So, you know, otherwise, you know, you pull the old Han Solo routine. give us a minute to lock it down. Everything's fine here. How are you?
Exactly.
You know, and that doesn't go over well, but you know, you know, that's one of those ones where it's like, as long as you don't fumble, I'm going to give it to you kind of thing. you rolled a fumble. Crap. So that's kind of a pet peeve where mechanics over role-playing. You know, it's like, because in a lot of the original, you know, as an old-school gamer, I'm very big into, you know, I remember playing where there were no skills. So it's like, as what are you going to tell the king to convince him to allow you to, I don't know, impersonate his guards or act as his guards for this caravan or whatever the hell the case may be. And, you know, people nowadays, well, I'm going to just tell him this. I have a really high persuasion. I'll just persuade him to do that. Really? Where's the role play? You're missing the opportunity to actually do a little role play, a little bit of thinking. I mean, this is a thinking game. It's just not a mechanical game of rolling dice, no matter how much we do that, a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, in those cases, I just say, okay, what do you say? And after they're done speaking, then I let them roll.
Right, but I mean, and again, to me, what they say can impact the die rolls if you do need die rolls. In some cases,
absolutely.
You know, and you were talking about where, you know, where you hate it when game master, you come up, the player's solution doesn't really impact the session or the story. You know, you were talking about the bowl and the key. Yep. You know, I've had the, you know, as a game master, I actually remember an adventure where there was only one solution listed in the adventure to defeat the monster. But the players came up with a solution that thematically made a lot of sense. And I'm like, I don't care what the damn rules, what the adventure says. That makes sense. I'm going to allow that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a judgment call. And it honestly had no impact on the rest of the game. But it made a huge impact on that adventure because it was something that was a great, you know, thematic event. And it made, you know, since it was a horror game, yeah, it made a lot of sense with the way they, you know, okay, we're going to use this cross to, like, crucify the corpse. And it's like, the rules say that didn't have any effect because you were supposed to, like, brute force kill the monster. But it's like, thematically, because it's kind of an undead, kind of weird mystic thing, and, you know, it's like, you know, this was a Solomon Kane game, and it's like, that makes sense. I like that. Let's go with that. You know, that's what you look for when you have a game master. If they can't do those things, that kind of bothers me. You know, you got to be able to, the spirit of the game is actually more important than the rules. I guess that's my other pet peeve, is when game masters think that the rules override what you're trying to accomplish in the game, what the feeling of the game you're trying to imbue.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I just got a little philosophical.
A little bit, but that's all right.
Any other ones before we go? Because we're pretty much out of time.
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think. I don't know if there's any other major pet peeves from the Game Master that does them.
If I had to say one, it's not a big one per se, but it kind of bit me in the ass once and I hated it. Was GMs who don't give proper game descriptions for their con games.
Okay.
I played in a game called Kistastrophe, which was the old Marvel's Kiss.
Okay.
Superheroes type game, and that was run by the same group that did the Nightmare on Sesame Street game. Same con, same day, and the description was like, you know, he had four players. You each played a member of, you know, the original Kiss. You had your Kiss superpowers that were, like, in the comic books and everything. And it's like, what's going on at this show in Los Angeles in 1978? Show up and find out. And there was some other stuff. And it sounded like this really great mystery. and I showed up, and it was a four-hour battle skirmish.
That's lame.
Yep.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Kiss movie at the movie park was. I mean, at the
Kiss meets the Phantom of the Park.
Yeah.
That is a classic, and I won't hear any different.
Where Ace Frehley was so drunk that his stuntman did some of his parts.
They actually, you can, if you look, they actually had a black stuntman for him in certain parts.
Exactly. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yes.
All right. So if people want to denounce my comments about the Kiss Phantom of the, what was it? Phantom of the...
Kiss meets the Phantom of the Park.
If you want to denounce my comments that I've made, or if you want to denounce any of our comments that we made, you want to agree with us, disagree with us, or just go sideways on us, I'm fine with that. You can go ahead and contact us. Leave us an email at info@rpgcircus.com. You can go to our Facebook page, post something on the wall. That's where we've gotten some of our ideas for the show. You can go to, obviously, the webpage itself and post in the comments there. Sometimes I will post back comments there rather than do them on the air, because sometimes that just works better for me. If you go to the Facebook page or our webpage, you can leave us a voicemail. Of course, right now we will not get back to it until for at least 4 weeks. But you can do that through the SpeakPipe application. But in the meantime, you can also use the info@rpgcircus.com email to request stickers. I will try to send those out. I still have some. Although, I hate to say it, it's almost time to update the logo. So, I don't know. The only problem is if I update the logo, I'll still have these stickers, but I'm not probably making new ones. Because that was a little bit of an investment, and I've never gotten rid of them all. So, I still have them. So, if you want them, I request them. And if you have anything, if you want to come on the show sometime, shoot us an email, and we'll see about in the new year maybe getting you on. Anything from you guys? Anything from the peanut gallery?
Not a whole heck of a lot, but we'll just say that I have been in talks with the fine folks over at the Happy Jacks RPG podcast, and I will be showing up on their show at some point here in the near future.
Oh, excellent.
We haven't quite nailed down exactly when that's going to be, but it'll be some point here before the end of the year.
All right.
That show myself. It's a great time.
Yeah. All right, and I think that calls for the end of this episode. And for those of you, have a wonderful set of holidays, because that's what we're doing this month of December. No matter what your choice of faith or whatever the hell it is, I mean, I don't know. I just, at this point, it's like, it's the holidays. I do care. Feed me. Give me a drink. Give me a hangover for New Year's. That's...
Hey, there you go.
What
more
can
I
ask
for?
Thank you. All right. So, all right. With that, we will see you guys in the new year.
Sounds good.
All righty. RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.